Welcome to Down Among the Donkeys, a podcast from the Donkey Sanctuary. In 13 episodes, we are telling the story behind the founding of one of the biggest equine charities in the world. Down Among the Donkeys by Dr. Elizabeth Svensson. Chapter 11, The Slade Centre. My dream of bringing health and happiness to disabled children with the aid of donkeys had come at a difficult time. The move to Slade House Farm was imminent, and I was very fully involved for the next few months and unable to take the project much further. A visit from a group of small disabled children to the donkey sanctuary, however, stung me into action. We had been asked by Millwater School of Honiton, which caters for children with special needs, if a few children could be brought up for a visit. And one afternoon, Mr. George Hopkins, the headmaster, his wife, and a few of the staff brought along some of their pupils. The nursery box at that time had some extremely gentle donkeys in it, including My Poppet, Jess, and Bilko, and a very pathetic donkey called Maundy, who had come in with the most appalling feet, and who had given birth to a dear little foal, which we named Faye. We allowed the disabled children to talk to them through the gate, and after a few moments, as the donkeys were behaving so beautifully, I allowed the children in. The reaction of both children and donkeys was wonderful. Some of the children were affected mentally, others physically and mentally, but all of them found the most tremendous excitement and joy in being able to handle and cuddle the donkeys. The donkeys seemed to enjoy it equally, and their very real cries of joy affected all the adults watching. I just sat there and reflected. Was this what I had been working towards? It was magical, and so worthwhile to see the satisfaction and fulfilment the children got. We had selected a few of our older, steadier donkeys, and we saddled three of these up to see if the children enjoyed being taken for a ride. At first, they screamed with terror as the donkeys began to move, but within a few minutes, all but two were thoroughly enjoying the experience. George Hopkins was equally as impressed, and on the spur of the moment, I asked if he would become a trustee if I were to make my dream into a reality and register a new charity for disabled children. He gladly agreed, and from that second, the project was really underway. I wanted to choose my team of trustees very carefully and selectively, as this time the charity would be working amongst educationalists as well as animal lovers. Niels at the hotel had already been busy helping the disabled. He had been approached by a gentleman called David Miller, who was employed by the social services in Honiton and had allowed the swimming pool to be used every Monday morning for the severely disabled swimming club, which was named the Dolphins. Niels and David Miller got on very well indeed, and when I met David, it seemed that he could contribute a great deal. So he too was invited to be a trustee. My sister Pat was another obvious choice with her Froebel-trained degree, and once again, June Evers agreed to join us with her medical knowledge. Niels and I together made up a body of six trustees with a fairly wide experience, and the first trustees meeting was held on the 12th of August 1975. It seemed important for this charity to have some well-known patrons, as we wanted the word to spread fast, and we were going to need large sums of money to build the dream centre that I had planned in my mind. We were already receiving generous donations from James Mason for the Donkey Sanctuary and wrote first to him to see if he would become our main patron. We were all delighted when he accepted, and then, at the suggestion of the other trustees, we drew up a list and were thrilled when people accepted our invitations. They included Dorian Williams, Leslie Crowther, Charlie Chester, Spike Milligan, Richard Hearn, Bob Forbes, Dr. Freddie Brimblecombe, and the Bishop of Dunwich, Reverend T. H. Cashmore. Once again, John Lovell was called upon to set up the charity and arrange for registration with the Charity Commission. I had a good idea in my mind of what I wanted our centre to look like, but I had been very interested to see an article in The Pony describing the Diamond Riding Centre, which catered for ponies and disabled children in Surrey. The architect of that centre was Brian Drury, and Niels and I rang him up and arranged to visit the centre. It was a most interesting day. Obviously, the building was very much larger than we would need, and included residential accommodation and the most enormous indoor arena and stable blocks, but it immediately formulated our minds as to how the centre should be built, and with the trustees' approval, we asked Brian Drury to draw up plans to our specified needs. We envisaged two distinct areas, one in which the children could play and be looked after between rides, and a large arena where they could actually have the rides. Attached to the arena would be an area for petting stables, where the children could go and cuddle and talk to the donkeys in between their rides. And we wanted an observation room with one-way glass, so that specialists and helpers watching the children's progress could observe the children without them feeling that beady eyes were on them all the time. It was essential that the maximum relaxation and pleasure should be given to the children. We wanted special sprays so that the arena could be kept dampened down, so that the asthmatic children wouldn't be affected by dust, overhead heating to keep them all warm, and if possible, a type of sound equipment that would enable the children to be talked to directly by the teacher in the observation room rather than by overhead loudspeakers. The idea, really, was for a children's haven, a day away from the rigidity of hospitals and hospital schools, where the luxury of normal living entered these children's days perhaps for the first time. We didn't want the bright reds, blues and yellows of primary colours that the children were used to. We wanted subtler, more relaxing shades of paintwork and decoration throughout the centre, and the whole atmosphere to be one of enjoyment and pleasure, and above all a change of environment that even the most disabled child could appreciate. So many extremely disabled children are never able to leave their hospital schools because there are simply not the facilities at the places they wish to visit. A special medical room was planned with full changing facilities for children and even a bath for emergencies. And then there were kitchens where the helpers could make their much-needed cups of tea and children could be given drinks too. Brian Drury drew up the plans to our joint specifications. We then turned to estimating how many schools we could help and what the potential was in the local area. George Hopkins and I drew up a list of schools for the disabled children within a 30-mile radius, and a simple questionnaire was designed and sent to find out whether or not the schools would like the opportunity of coming to our centre if it were to be built, and to find out the degree of handicaps from each school to whom we were writing. The head teachers from all schools were invited to an informal evening at Slade House Farm, and I got an immense boost when 11 schools were represented. The encouragement they gave us was wonderful. In the area, there were apparently difficulties in finding extra activities their children could take part in, as indeed it seems there is all over the country, and for hospital schools like Franklin Hospital School at Exeter and Courtney Hospital School at Stoke Lyne, Exmouth. One of their biggest problems in taking their children out anywhere was finding somewhere which had the proper facilities for the care of their severely physically and mentally disabled children. A lot of these children had regular epileptic fits, so they were thrilled with our promise of beds and even baths for their more difficult cases. And so the idea of our centre, which could possibly incorporate all these items, was of the greatest interest to them. But to make sure we were working along the right lines, five of us started taking a team of our donkeys round to five of the schools for one morning or afternoon each week, so that we could gauge the value of the whole project before anything further was spent. Noddy, who loved to get away from the household chores, had always been extremely keen on horses, and she and I together gathered up a team of donkeys that we thought suitable and organised our first visits. My mother hated being left alone at this time, and so she came with us and would sit looking after the riding hats which she passed out to each child. We found the children absolutely loved her, and one large angular boy at the Courtney Hospital School wandered up to her and said, "Are you a real granny?" And she said, "Yes, dear. I have never met a real granny before," he said. "Can I kiss you?" And this child bent down and kissed my mother firmly. The arrival of the donkeys in their specially adapted horse box became to some children the most important time of the week. With a team of voluntary helpers from the neighbourhood, we would drive into the hospital schools and park the lorry near the area we had chosen to work in. The joy on the children's faces as the donkeys came down the ramp was indescribable. Some of the children were so disabled or crippled that it took two grown men to carefully lift them onto the backs of the donkeys. It took three helpers to each donkey, one to lead and two to support the child on each side. And our first visits to the different schools were always extremely difficult. Our weight regulations were very carefully maintained, and no child over 8 stone was allowed a ride. Some of the children screamed as soon as they saw the donkeys, but others would run up and throw their arms round them and gain tremendous comfort from the close association with such a large woolly animal. I can't describe the donkey's behaviour, but it was somewhere near miraculous. Children would scramble under the donkey's tummies, and the donkeys would stand there patiently looking down with a kindly glance. We tried to teach the children from the start the correct side to mount and never to go behind a donkey, and even to some of these pathetic little cases, the message gradually got through. By the time we had visited each school 5 or 6 times on a regular basis, almost every child greeted the arrival of the donkeys with squeals of joy. I formulated a theory then, which I still believe, that the children looked on the donkey as a disabled horse. For some reason, people seemed to laugh at donkeys, and perhaps they felt a liaison, that they too were not quite right and were also laughed at times. Whatever the link, it was certainly there, and when the plans for our riding centre were proposed by Brian Drury, I knew the money somehow had to be found to build the centre. With the trustees, we sat down to work out the best way of introducing our scheme to the planning authorities to produce the quickest result. Suddenly, the winter was upon us. The joy of taking the donkeys to the children was over, and we realised that the indoor centre was urgently needed. We were so afraid that the progress we were making with the children was going to be lost, and the trustees decided to invite the chief planning officer, Mr. Dixon, to advise us which site to select. He came, and on the 26th of August 1975, walked around and seemed extremely impressed by the idea of the whole project, although he did say there could well be some planning problems, as the sanctuary is situated in an area of outstanding natural beauty and a coastal preservation area, and we wanted the Slade Centre nearby. But still full of enthusiasm, I took the plans to Mr. Howarth of the Sidmouth Town Council and began to feel the first inkling of the trouble that was to lie ahead. Our local paper, the Sidmouth Herald, was right behind us, and on the 30th of August, they produced a special feature outlining the idea for the Slade Centre. I just couldn't believe the headline that appeared 2 weeks later in the same paper. Donkey plan looks like biting the dust. Mrs. Elizabeth Svensson's idea for a riding centre for disabled children at the Donkey Sanctuary Slade House Farm, Salcombe Regis, looks like biting the dust before she has even made formal application to the East Devon District Council. Mrs. Svensson discussed her plans with Mr. Eric G. Howarth, clerk of Sidmouth Town Council, and last week he mentioned them to members of the planning committee. After a long discussion, the committee decided unanimously to oppose Mrs. Svensson's idea. The decision was based partly on strong opposition from the Sid Vale Association, but mostly on the feelings of councillors that the proposals would be completely out of keeping with the area of outstanding natural beauty in which the farm is set. Among the council members who opposed the plan was Mr. S. N. Baker, himself a disabled person, who said, "Everyone has a great deal of sympathy with a scheme like this, but on the site proposed, it is just not on." Councillor C. E. Fryer, chairman of Sidmouth Town Council, said he was sure most members of the public would feel the centre should be allowed, but on planning grounds, there were many reasons for turning it down. Although members of the planning committee seem adamant in their opposition to the proposal, no definite decision has been taken. This is because the plans have not yet been formally put before the council. And even when they have been, the town council can only make a recommendation which may be overruled by the East Devon District Council. Mrs. Svensson's reaction to the council's attitude was one of bitter disappointment. She said, "I cannot understand why this plan should meet with such fierce opposition. The proposed riding school would be behind the present farm buildings and down in a dip. It would not be visible from the road or the coastal walk. People would have to go out of their way to find it. I'm not a property shark trying to make thousands of pounds by speculating on tower blocks which will ruin the countryside. One of the reasons my husband and I live in this area is because we love the beautiful scenery, so why should we want to spoil it? Since we moved the donkey sanctuary to Slade House Farm earlier this year, we have made improvements to its appearance. We are currently engaged in an extensive tree planting scheme in partnership with the Men of the Trees. Why should disabled children not be able to share in the beauty we all appreciate so much and have some really worthwhile therapy at the same time? If my plans are turned down, it will be a great disappointment, not only to me, but to dozens of needy children in this area. There must be a way to work this out so everyone is happy." I just couldn't believe that before we had even submitted the plans, they'd been turned down. Since our arrival at Slade House Farm, we had improved it greatly and we had reduced traffic to the area by closing the caravan park and stopping the letting of the holiday flats. Amongst the number of letters that appeared the next week supporting our idea, there were an equal number opposing it, and the wildest accusations and suggestions began to be published in the press. We were taking the food from the mouths of dying children starving in Bangladesh, and it was just another way of getting planning permission for a holiday camp. Of course, our biggest opponents of all were the Sid Vale Association, set up to protect the natural amenities of Sidmouth and its surrounding area, and they were certainly a force to be reckoned with. There is no doubt that the planners and ourselves were put under the greatest possible pressure. With the architect, we had chosen a site which we knew could not be seen from anywhere, and which blended in with the buildings already around the farm. Had we been of agricultural status, we would have been allowed to erect a barn much higher than the building we proposed with no planning permission needed at all, and yet we were willing to raise the funds to help children in desperate need in our own locality by building our centre and were receiving almost fanatical opposition. Many people, particularly from the horse world, were not sure that donkeys were the right animals to do the job. Pony riding for the disabled had proved valuable, but I felt convinced that the gentler donkey also had a great deal to offer, since not only is it easier for a child to obtain the correct riding position on the narrower back of the donkey compared to the pony, but the whole animal is much more cuddly, warm and attractive to the child. Having once got used to riding on our donkeys, the child could go on to riding ponies with a distinct advantage. I also knew that most of the riding for the disabled centres were only open for half a day a week, and our donkeys were already in demand for many more sessions than we could fulfil, even going out 5 times a week. The plans were officially submitted, and the letters and the arguments on the planning continued over Christmas. No decision had been made, and the East Devon planners were being inundated by letters from our patrons, with people such as James Mason, Richard Hearn, Dorian Williams, and the Vicar of Salcombe Regis, Michael Courtney, supporting us. It was decided that the planners would come out and see the site and make a decision after that. It was a very tense day for us all. The planning committee turned up in force, and it was difficult to know who was on which side. All the questions were answered fully, and we appealed to them all, for the sake of the disabled children, to support our application. In January, the East Devon District Council eventually decided against us by 12-7. One member of the council said that he had turned down the application in the interests of the disabled children, and I think this hit me harder than anything else. I just couldn't face anybody. I lay on my bed and cried. The rain was beating against the windows as I thought of the many disabled children. They would have to wait until the summer, not only this year, but every other year. We just had to have that decision reversed. In my dreams, I had never considered anybody opposing the idea, and in a strange way, I felt very sorry for the people responsible. Few of the actual members of the Sid Vale Association seemed to have been born and bred in Sidmouth. The majority had moved in from other parts of the country and had built their own modern bungalows or houses, or moved into buildings which previous planners had seen fit to grant. I would invite the officials of their society up to see the site for themselves, take them round and appeal to them to reconsider their strong opposition. A strong cup of coffee and some sensible words from Niels soon put me back on my feet, and we called a trustees meeting to plan our next action. We had just purchased Brookfield Farm and decided to put in a new planning application for the centre to be built there. The farm was miles from anywhere, and at least the Sid Vale Association would not be able to put their force behind the opposition. Brian Drury had to go out and redraw all the plans. I think he was as disappointed as we were, since he had spent a lot of time and effort in trying to get the plans passed, but he gladly started work at the new site. In the meantime, we started our second year's work in the summer of 1976, going out with the donkeys. The children had looked forward to this and waited anxiously for the weather to improve so that work could start. Our donkeys, including Solo and Black Coffee, remembered their way round the hospitals and schools so well that they hardly needed any leaders. Solo enjoyed more than anything going up the long ramp and into one of the classrooms at Ellen Tinkham School near Exeter, where the severely disabled children would lie on airbeds, unable to come out into the garden unless the weather was particularly good. Solo would nuzzle up to them gently, and the children would get the greatest pleasure from touching her soft nose and feeling the warmth of donkey's breath so close to them. The team that took the donkeys, led by Noddy, got tremendous pleasure and satisfaction from the trips, and the schools, who had originally thought it was going to be just another charitable idea which would soon fade out, had now begun to realise that we really meant to continue the work and were cooperating very fully. We received the most marvellous letter from the headmistress of one of the schools as follows. 22nd of July, 1976. Dear Mrs. Svensson, Tam, writing on behalf of the staff and myself to thank you also very much for bringing the donkeys to our school this term. We must admit that the first Thursday you came, It was all great fun for the children, but we honestly thought that you and your helpers were living in cloud cuckoo land, with your records of progress and mounting and sitting, and the other things you asked us to do. All the staff wish me to tell you how very wrong we were. The progress of so many of the children has really amazed us. The different way they now sit, and how so many of them can now sit without support. The joy the rides bring to the blind, the real laughter that comes from those who very seldom laugh. Perhaps the greatest thing to us is the motivation it has given to Stephen. For 3 years we have tried to find something to motivate this very withdrawn little boy who lives in a world of his own. The first day we saw him climb on the donkey, on his own, well, we could have cried. I don't think you and your great band of helpers quite realize the good you have done to these children. We cannot thank you enough and beg you to try to keep coming. You must know the importance of continuity for these children. So, from all the children, the staff and myself, we send you a very big thank you. Signed, P. M. Dallaig. No sooner had the plans been put into Honiton for consideration for the new area when opposition started yet again. A petition was drawn up in a local village, and David Miller, one of our trustees, who lived in Honiton, began to receive objectionable letters and phone calls, despite the fact that many Honiton children were already benefiting from the visits of the donkeys. A hasty trustees' meeting was called when the local parish council turned us down, and as we knew the opposition was going to be extremely strong, we decided to withdraw the application from East Devon planning meetings. Niels was marvellous in his support at this time. Come on, he said, it's not like you to give up. We'll start a new campaign in March, and we will fight every inch of the way. We will organise our own petition, and we will get the disabled schools and children to help us, and I am sure if we all pull together we can win through. It was like preparing for a battle. We already knew most of the objections that were going to be thrown at us, and the first people I invited up were the chairman, secretary, and treasurer of the Sid Vale Association. It was a pleasant meeting, but they didn't seem at all impressed. All they could say was, "This is an area of outstanding natural beauty, and we don't really think it's suitable for you to build a centre and have disabled children here," intimating any further application would be opposed. I felt indignant afterwards. I hadn't even gained an inch for the project. The official line of the East Devon District Council had been to recommend to the committee that the plans were passed, and so they, at least, were on our side, but there were many members of both the Sidmouth Town Planning Committee and the East Devon Planning Committee who were totally opposed to our project. In case by this stage they weren't fully aware of all that the charity was aiming for, we drew up a letter pointing out all the points in our favour. We changed the plans as far as possible to meet their recommendations and put a desperate appeal for the support of readers into all the local press. And this is the letter that I designed. Dear reader, this is a desperate appeal to you personally to help us in our efforts to obtain planning permission to build an indoor centre for severely disabled children. They will be brought winter and summer to love, enjoy and slowly learn the basic elements of riding, using our carefully trained and selected donkeys. A special building is essential, for this work incorporates ramps for wheelchairs, guide rails for the blind, sprinklers to keep down dust in the arena area, special toilets for the disabled, and good heating facilities. You may remember that our last application to build a centre at Slade House Farm was turned down by a very narrow majority under pressure from the Sid Vale Association. Having been turned down, we felt that if the children could not come to us, we would go to the children, and this we did. The results of 51 sessions at 5 schools and hospitals within a 20-mile radius has proved the immense value of the work, and written and pictorial evidence is available. Some children, for the first time in their lives, actually began to count the days of the week, because for them, one day was Donkey Day. Their disappointment when the weather stopped our regular visits affected the school and hospital staff as well as us. We wait to see how much of the immense progress made has been retained by the children when we start again in the spring. How much better if we could bring them all out in our specially adapted coach, which could take wheelchair cases, every week. Facilities get less and less for them, with the cutback in spending by local authorities, and this would be totally charitable, neither the children, schools, hospital or education authorities being asked to provide one penny. In deference to the Sid Vale Association, we applied for planning permission to build the centre at Farway at our new farm. Imagine our disappointment when this was turned down by the local parish council. We had to think again, and the trustees decided that if we redesigned it to suit the planning committee and to meet as far as possible the requests of the Sid Vale Association, we might be able to have it at Slade House Farm. After all, last year, Sidmouth Town Council passed the plans and everyone was surprised when the East Devon District Council Planning Committee ignored the recommendation of their own site inspection committee and turned the plan down by a small majority. We agree that we are in an area of outstanding natural beauty, but then so is quite a large area of Devon, over 300 square miles of it. Why stop disabled children enjoying it? The facts are as follows. 1. The new building will be built on agricultural lines, redesigned from the last application, to fit in with the planner's requirements. 2. This time, no accommodation will be provided. Therefore, if necessary, the building could revert to agricultural use, and this could be a condition of the consent. 3. The building cannot be seen from anywhere, as agreed by last year's site committee, so it is hard to see how it can spoil the neighbourhood. 4. The maximum height of the building will be 16 feet, lower than the average house, and very much lower than Slade House Farm itself. Did you know that up until last year there was a licensed caravan site at Slade House Farm? This was closed by the sanctuary, thus reducing traffic. Our coach and the volunteer helpers' cars will produce less traffic per day than the previous caravans. 6. Donkeys have proved ideally suitable for the task, and a trained riding instructress will be in charge of the riding. When the children grow too large, they can go on with confidence to riding ponies. We all pray that to save the time and expense of an appeal, our local community will support us and help persuade the planning committee to make a favourable decision this time on the centre so that we can commence it in Jubilee year, in deference to Her Majesty's wishes that projects should be concerned with young people. We hope to call it the Slade Jubilee Centre. If you want our local disabled children to be able to use this centre, then please help us by voicing your opinion, either by signing a petition in favour of the project or by writing to East Devon District Council direct. Care of Mr. A.S. Dixon, Chief Planning Officer, East Devon District Council, 31 Southern Hay East, Exeter, EX1 1NT. Once again, the press went to town. Letter after letter and article after article appeared for and against the project. The planning meeting was to be in May 1977, and over 1,328 people signed our petition. We arranged a demonstration outside the planning meeting, and every councillor arriving was greeted by donkeys and disabled children. When the last councillor had arrived, Niels and I, and all our supporters, slipped into the public benches, filling them to capacity. On the other side of the public section could be seen the Sid Vale delegation, sitting every bit as tensely as we were. I nearly cried as Councillor Ernest Whitten stood up and supported her strongly, and we sat with bated breath while the vote was taken. It was approved by 15-3. However, there were conditions, one being that we would almost have to redesign the whole centre to meet the planner's requirements. But redesign we would, and submit the plan to the council again before we could actually start our work. The planning troubles almost solved, finance became the next headache. An enormously encouraging thing had happened. The Tiverton Youth Centre organised a sponsored walk, and I went over with one of the little donkeys to meet them at the end of the gruelling ordeal. They raised over £300 for the Slade Centre, and this was the first substantial sum we received. I had been told by the Charity Commission of a special book called Directory of Grant Making Trusts, listing many charitable trusts willing to give money to projects like ours. We wrote over 200 letters to obtain funds, but the response was extremely disappointing. Why did it seem so much easier to raise money for the donkeys than it was for the disabled children? However, after the battles we'd already had, we just kept on writing and the money began to come in. Our original estimate on the cost of the building had been between £80,000 and £90,000, but now, to our horror, with the passage of time, this had increased to between £130,000 and £140,000. This figure seemed impossible in view of my poor efforts in raising funds. It was also extremely expensive employing an architect from such a long distance, and very regretfully and on the best of terms, we decided we would have to change our architects. A firm of architects in Exeter drew up all the plans anew. We made the centre slightly smaller and adapted it to the planner's requirements. We also managed to get the price of the centre down to a more manageable £75,000, and our new plans were passed without too much problem. The foundation stone was laid on the 14th of June 1978. Once again, we went out to the schools during that summer, and by now the children were the greatest of friends with us. It was very sad to find that some of the children with progressive diseases had in fact sunk backwards and were unable to get the same benefit from the donkeys as the year before. But this was made up for by the many children who had now improved to such an extent that they could ride unaided with only a helper leading the donkey. In the 3 years since we had started going out to the schools, some of our original pupils had now grown too large, and it was heartbreaking to see their disappointment when they were unable to ride. However, I had a little trap, and Noddy and I dusted it down and altered it so that we could lift the disabled children up into it when they were too large to actually ride the donkeys. It also took the children who were too disabled for riding. This proved a great success, and we decided to tarmac a track round the actual Slade Centre so that the children could drive round in the traps. The planners had asked us to make a high bank to obscure the centre from the main road, and we made this wide enough to possibly use one day in the future so that the children would get a superb sea view from above the centre. Staffing of the new project had to be thought about. Noddy had left us to be near her ageing mother in Cornwall. My sister Pat, a fully qualified teacher, was finding life lonely as a widow at Compton Dando. At a trustees' meeting, she was approved as the supervisor in charge of the play area section and decided on two qualified riding instructors to run the riding part. Obviously, salaries could not be high, and Pat agreed to come in at a salary of approximately half that she was receiving as a teacher. It was a tremendous weight off my mind when I knew Pat could come and run the centre, because without totally dedicated staff, projects of this sort cannot continue. Pat was totally dedicated, not only to the donkeys, but to children, as I was, and her very real enthusiasm would, I knew, really get Slade going. The offer from the Marquess of Bath had been gratefully accepted, and we got together with the Donkey Breed Society, who very helpfully agreed to put on a donkey show on the date selected, all the funds going to the Slade Centre. The sanctuary had already agreed that it would make it a very special day to show off the donkeys and all the work being done at Slade House Farm. And with Julie's organising ability from the office, we commenced the mammoth task of organising tents, show rings and catering facilities for the thousands we hoped would arrive. We spent weeks of preparation and work, and on the great day the enormous marquee was full of donkeys and goods to buy. The Donkey Breed Society had organised a superb show, which included fancy dress classes which were already fully subscribed, a large number of our disabled children taking part. We had organised 3 busloads of children from our schools, and all seemed set for the most wonderful fundraising event. James Mason and Arthur Negus had agreed to be there, and you can imagine our horror when tremendous gale-force winds hit the site the night before, and the day was marred by torrential rain. Over 4,000 visitors did, however, turn up to see us, and the work done at the donkey sanctuary and in aid of the children, and we were lucky to get away without making a substantial loss. The Marquess of Bath and his family were absolutely wonderful to us, and he presented us with a superb coat of arms to be given to the child who made the most progress in each year at the Slade Centre. I missed Niels desperately at this time, as he was battling his way round Britain on the Round Britain race with his partner Norman Brooke. He was very sad not to be there, and I could certainly have done with his shoulder to lean on when we realised that the day had not turned out the financial success we had hoped. However, there was no doubt that 4,000 more people knew of the work we were doing. We had always assumed that the children could be brought in from the schools by their own school buses, but it soon became apparent that this was not going to be the case. We needed our own bus, one with a hydraulic lift at the back for the wheelchairs and stretcher children, and with room to place those children who had to be carried on airbeds in a comfortable position. We eventually designed and ordered our bus, which was going to cost £9,000 and take 6 months to build. But I must admit, as the time came near for payment and delivery of the bus for the official opening on the 5th of December, I was getting a little desperate. One of the foundations I had written to in the Book of Charity Trusts had been the Langkelly and Hamblin Foundation, and they came up trumps with a magnificent cheque for £9,000, received shortly before the bus was delivered. We had to provide lunch for some of the children, as their school arrangements just didn't fit. The average cost for a school meal turned out to be 75p, and Niels promised that the hotel would provide lunches at this cost, but of course of a slightly different standard to that achieved perhaps in hospital schools. Mrs. Pitts of the school meal service helped tremendously, providing special heat-insulated boxes to transport the hot food. The day of the 5th of December was cold but bright, and in a very moving opening ceremony, which was performed by the Marquess of Bath, the Slade Centre was opened and ready to start work. The beautiful big play area that we built had been furnished by the kindness of many companies who had donated toys and furnishings to us. In particular, the Railion Group donated play furniture, and Piccolo Books keep us supplied with a complete children's library. The problem of giving rides to children in wheelchairs had always been with us, and I rang Westland Helicopters one day to see if they could suggest any way of making a special donkey trap into which we could put a wheelchair with a child in it. They took up the project with their second-year engineering students and built the most magnificent cart, in which the back lets down, ramps come out, and the wheelchair is simply pushed up the back and strapped into place, the back ramp being the back of the trap when fastened up. Around the centre is the tarmac track for cart riders, and our riding instructors have designed a beautiful set of traffic lights, which the children have to obey, also the stop and go sign, in the hope of trying to instill some form of road safety into the lesson. Having the indoor centre has meant that we have been able to progress with some of the schools to the first stages of a proper riding lesson. The centre is open 6 days a week and 50 weeks a year, as of course disabled hospital schools do not take normal school holidays. A team of 40 creme de la creme donkeys has been specially selected for the work at Slade, and the team thoroughly enjoys itself. 10 donkeys are on duty for a week at a time and have 3 weeks off, so none can be even remotely overworked. And it is surprising how they line the rails of the paddock in which they are kept as the school bus arrives each day and genuinely enjoy the shouts and yells of the visiting children as they see their favourites. The staff at Slade are showing complete dedication to their job and the love and enthusiasm that manifests itself throughout the whole of the Slade Centre is immediately apparent to visitors and staff alike, and makes completely worthwhile the years of effort in establishing Slade, one of the most unique riding centres in existence. It has now been open for nearly 2 years.